Hey there, and welcome back to Holding Space Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Cassidy, and I'm so glad you're tuning in today. In this episode, we are talking about what it means to parent as a highly sensitive person, or HSP. In this episode, you're going to learn what it means to be a highly sensitive person. We're going to talk about some of the different ways that we can begin to understand how sensory overload and multiple competing expectations can cause parents stress. We're going to identify some practical steps to reducing sensory overload, overstimulation, and create realistic expectations for yourself as a parent. And also talk about how we can begin to care for ourselves in this modern era of parenting. I invited Amy onto the podcast. She is a therapist and coach who has spent countless hours supporting highly sensitive parents in reclaiming their peace and confidence. She is a highly sensitive person herself, as well as a mother of two highly energetic young children. And she's going to walk us through it. I'm so excited for you to meet her and to learn more about this experience as a parent. So let's dive in. You're listening to Holding Space Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Cassidy Freitas. I'm a mom to three and licensed marriage and family therapist. I'm really glad that you took the time to hold space for you by tuning in to today's episode. My hope with this podcast is to share conversations with experts from around the world and parents who've been through it so that maybe you feel a little less alone in your experiences and the messy side of being a parent and being a human, and so that you can walk away with supportive steps for what to do next. Listening to this episode is not a substitute for seeking support from a professional in your area. I believe that holding space and offering presence to both ourselves and others is truly one of the most meaningful ways that we can express care. And you are so deserving of that care. All right, are you ready? Let's dive in. Hello, I am here with Amy Lajeunesse, and we are going to be talking all about being a sensitive parent, which I am so excited to dive deeper into with you, and self-care and like all the good stuff, all my favorite stuff to talk about. And so, Amy, before we dive in, could you share a little bit about yourself with the listeners so they can get a chance to get to know you?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm a therapist and a coach for highly sensitive parents living in San Diego, California. And I myself am a highly sensitive parent and a person, and I'm a mom of two very energetic little boys. So that's where I'm at. And I love to hike. I love to play guitar and sing and carve out some time for myself in the midst of a busy life of motherhood and work.
I would love to hear your definition of this. Like, how would you define what it means to be a highly sensitive parent? Because I'm so glad that we have a name for this and that we're talking more about this. I think that the generation before us didn't have that, right? Like,
right.
Words, language, those things matter to sometimes be able to feel like we're not alone in an experience or to describe our experience. And I'm so grateful that we have these terms now. But I think sometimes they need to be defined, right? And I've talked about this on the podcast before, and I think that it's important to honor that we all might have different understandings of what this experience might look like. And as for you, someone who identifies as being a highly sensitive parent, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right to notice that it's different for everybody, and that there's not like one single person who is the model highly sensitive person and other people don't count. It really is, like many things, a spectrum of sensitivity, and everyone's experience is really unique with that. So one thing that I find really helpful to help to understand what high sensitivity is and what the HSP trait is an acronym that Dr. Elaine Aron, who coined the term HSP, who has done so much wonderful research about high sensitivity, created to describe what high sensitivity is. And it's the word DOES, D-O-E-S. So I'd like to kind of talk about that framework just a little bit, because while it applies to all HSPs, it really helps to me to frame how being highly sensitive offers many gifts to parents, but also creates some unique challenges for those of us who are highly sensitive parents. So yeah, the DOES acronym, the D stands for depth of processing. So anecdotally, HSP parents are pretty reflective of how we want to parent. We're really intentional. And this is wonderful for our children, and it can be really rewarding for us. But there's times when that can feel, we can get stuck in it, right? We can be a little overwhelmed by like, well, what's the right way to do things? And how can I be the best parent that I possibly can be? So that's depth of processing. The second one is major. It's the big one that a lot of people experience, and where they notice, gosh, I am a highly sensitive person, and being a parent makes that challenging sometimes, and that's being overstimulated easily. So for me personally, that really showed up when my kids were babies, like really little babies, and when I was balancing having a toddler and an infant at the same time, and there were literal competing demands from both of them, and the crying and the pulling and the just needing to balance
and all the senses, right? Like there's the sound aspect, but then there's the like feeling touched out aspect, all the smells, right? The like visual of like all the mess or all the primary colors like around you all of a sudden. The temperature, right? Like the, so much.
Right. You know, absolutely. I'm so glad you mentioned that, because it is a lot of the time people just think about like sound as being overstimulating, but it totally is the physical. I call it like baby detritus. Like there's just stuff everywhere and lots to kind of visually track. And the smells and sometimes those sensory aspects can feel really nourishing for us, right? Like the cuddles and the smells of our newborn baby, or the feel of their hand in ours when they're a little older. It can be so lovely. And sometimes those exact same inputs can be overwhelming and lead to kind of some guilt and some, why is my child causing me to feel this way? And am I a bad parent for not enjoying this moment with them? And it really comes down to that sensory overload.
Yeah. Thank you so much for naming that, because I mean, I can think of many, many moments where I have had my son, my middle child, who has actually sensory processing disorder, and oftentimes will lean up against me almost for his own sensory input. And I understand that now because of the support we've gotten for him. And there's many moments where I remember even his OT saying, is it, because he would do it with her too. And she's like, it's so sweet. And but then she acknowledged me. She's like, but I can also imagine that sometimes it's a lot. And I'm like, gosh, thank you for naming that, because there are moments where I'm just like, he's my cuddly little guy, and he just wants to like, he'll find me, right? Like the whole big couch, and he'll find his sweet little body will find mine to lean up against. Moments when I love that totally, and plenty of moments where I find myself wanting to move away. and then that's when the guilt or shame creeps in, right? With the whispers of like, you know, a good mom wouldn't want to do that, or what's wrong with you. And it could be a vicious cycle.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so to me, that's one of the biggest challenges that HSP parents face. And I'm sure we'll get to talking about how to kind of shift mindset around that and really give yourself grace and permission to feel what it is that you're feeling, and to not label it as good or bad, and to celebrate the positive aspects of being deeply feeling as well. So
yes, we'll get there. So there's the O. What's the E?
There's the O. Yeah. So the E is emotional responsiveness and empathy. And this is one that I hope everyone can see right away, is a real gift to ourselves, especially when we have HSP children, which one of mine is and one of mine isn't. So that's really interesting. But when we can attune to what they're feeling, to what their needs might be. So sometimes, for example, HSP parents might notice like something's off with them, or like they seem like they're a little fussy, and someone who's not as sensitive or as emotionally attuned might take them a little longer. And again, that's okay, right? We all have our strengths and weaknesses, but when we are able to notice and name for our children, oh, you're feeling a little sad today, or I'm noticing you're feeling a little bit upset about what happened, and help them to know what it is that they need to feel better. It's such an incredible gift that we can offer to our children.
Mm. And I can also see though how some of these, just these first three that you've named, like can sometimes cycle with each other in a way that actually might be challenging, right? Mm. So if I get overstimulated and, you know, guilt and shame creeps in, there's also the part of me that has empathy, right? Like for their need. And then that feels maybe like a competing against my own need for space. And then for the, you know, the depth of processing, like I'm thinking so deeply about the kind of parent I want to be and how I want to engage in these moments. I could see sometimes those things, you know, gosh, even almost like battling against against each other and against me trying to figure out, well, where are my needs and how do I prioritize those while still like showing up for my kids and having this deep empathy for like their experience. I don't know. It can be they can feed into each other in a tricky way. Would you agree?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. And to me, that's kind of the crux of, you know, HSP parents learning how to kind of do that dance. And what I often see is self-neglect. I'll just name it for what it is, like self-neglect. And, you know, when that empathy kicks in and when we notice, oh my gosh, my kid is distressed because I don't want to cuddle with them. It's like a knife to the gut. It can feel so awful for us. And yet, when we are dysregulated, when we are, I kind of use the metaphor of like when we're below water, right? When like, when we're not above water, when we don't see things clearly, when we're not okay in our bodies or our minds, we are not the parents that we want to be then either. And so for me, it comes down to being honest with yourself about, you know, it's so cliche, but you can't pour from an empty cup. You know, if you notice that you are feeling increasingly angry, like rage can come out a lot for HSP parents, and that can feel very unexpected for many of us who did not experience that before kids. Irritable, tearful, just not ourselves. Like those are all cues. In addition to kind of those physical cues of panic or, you know, your heart racing that tell you I'm not okay right now. Yeah. And it's very easy for HSP parents to try to ignore those in favor of being fully, well, what we think is fully present with our kids, but in actuality is kind of being hollow and going through the motions. And so it's a really tricky dilemma, Cassidy, that you mentioned, that you named here, and I'm so glad that we're talking about it.
I know there's another element here, that there's the S we're going to get to of the DOES acronym, but I something that's just coming up for me is I've worked with many clients who would probably really connect with a lot of these elements so far that you're naming, right? Like the finding themselves feeling very overstimulated as a parent and having so much empathy and sensitivity to the people around them. But it almost, because of maybe their own experiences, history, triggers, and then responses of things that maybe they had to learn, you know, growing up to keep themselves safe or keep themselves, you know, close to the people around them, have almost learned to like shut that down a little bit, right? Like the empathy is so, the feelings are so big that they've kind of put up some defenses or blocks. And that sometimes even they might say, well, I know that I want to be a better parent, but I don't know necessarily feel like I spend enough time thinking about the kind of parent that I want to be. It's almost like that's too intense for me, or I'm too scared to go there because of all the shame I might feel for like the way in which I am showing up as a parent or how screwed up I am. And so is there a version of that too that you see with HSP parents?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, that's one of the struggles that a lot of people experience is sort of the overlapping layers of expectations and shoulds. You know, I should be doing this. And if, you know, this narrative of if I were a good parent, if I were the best mom I could be, I would be doing, you know, fill in the blank. And the challenge is that many of those expectations are, they overlap or they conflict with one another, right? So I'll name like a common one is if I were a good parent, I would be, you know, taking my kid to all of these extracurricular, signing them up for soccer or like baby music playgroup. Mm-hmm. And then there's this other narrative, you know, if I were a good parent, I would be fully present and spending lots of time with my kids at home, you know, working versus not working outside the home, just... And so for many, I think for particularly for moms, it can feel like there's not a winning combination or not one that's going to meet with approval from all parties. And that includes, you know, society. It includes ourselves, our partners, our parents or other family members or, you know, community members. And that can be really scary to look at that and to make an informed decision about how we spend our time and energy as parents when we know that it might not be met with approval or we might be letting somebody down by making the choice that we do. And so it really can lead, as you named, to parents being overwhelmed or even like freezing and just being so uncertain about what to do or getting stuck in that guilt or shame, as we've talked about, that I must be doing something wrong because I'm not doing it like that or because this person's upset about my choice.
Yeah. I think that, you know, for the listener, if you're tuning into this episode, there's something that resonates with the idea of or connecting to being highly sensitive. And, you know, I would offer you this prompt of reflecting on, okay, if you're a highly sensitive adult, you were probably a highly sensitive child too. Yeah. And with all those deep feelings that you had and those sensitivities that you had and how that came out probably when you were very, very, very young, how did the environment and the people around you respond to that, right? Like, what do you think you kind of had to learn to, you know, as children, it's, you know, deeply ingrained in us, like from a biological evolutionary perspective, to keep our caretakers close to us for survival, right? And so we learn what pushes them away or what brings them closer, what the rules are and expectations are for what we do with our – or how people respond to our big feelings or what we're supposed to do with them when we feel them. Mm-hmm. And just to ask yourself, like, how do I think people responded to me when I had a tantrum or when I got really overwhelmed or when I let it all out, you know? When my body got dysregulated or, you know, the overwhelm of the world around me resulted in whatever it was, the stress response, the fight, the flying, you know, the fight, flight, freeze, you know, response.
Right.
Like, how do people respond to that? And what did you learn about yourself, who you are, the world around you, and how you're supposed to handle those things? And what did you bring into your adulthood, right? Because that might help you have a deeper, more nuanced understanding of how what we're talking about here might actually be showing up for you in those mm-hmm. moments for you and in your body. Mm-hmm. So, okay, I know we just like dove in because it's all such good stuff, but there's one more. There's an S. So what's the S?
Yeah, I love that prompt, by the way, and I think that can really yield some powerful insight for HSPs and parents. So yes, the S is sensitivity to subtle stimuli, and that is, I kind of think of HSPs in general as the like the prairie dogs of society, that we're kind of like poking our heads out, we're scanning the environment, we're noticing what's going on. You know, scanning for danger, which is draining, but also kind of seeing the beauty in things too. So many HSPs really love just the sensory, sensual aspects of life, right? Music and art and natural beauty, and we really delight, you know, as parents in our the uniqueness of our children's, you know, physical and emotional selves, and so that can be. Again, sort of a mixed bag. There can be some things that are challenging and we need to learn how to work with. And there's also things that we can, it's like the volume's turned up, right? We just notice things and feel things more deeply.
The volume is turned up. The vibrancy is turned up. Mm. I so appreciate you bringing the other side of the coin to each of these. And I'm just thinking about some folks that I've worked with and people I know in my own life and myself as you're sharing all of this, and just thinking how sometimes what we've learned to shut down in ourselves, or what we've learned that we need to do in order to survive, sometimes gets in the way of us really having access to that other side of the coin, right? It's like,
yeah,
I might walk through life feeling like I really notice like subtle stimuli and being very sensitive to that, but I might not feel like I have space to really also connect in with that same part of me that notices the vibrancy of life and the music and the color and the breeze and all the everything, all the beauty around me, right? Like it's just if we've learned maybe that we have to be on alert, right?
Yeah.
It gives us this tunnel vision that might not be able, and that might be conducive to us being able to access those other parts of ourselves, right? So I so appreciate you naming them though, so that this person listening is able to identify like, okay, this doesn't make me wrong or bad or weak, or like there's something wrong with me. Like there's so much actual like value to these parts of myself too. I just, I gotta help these parts feel safe enough to, and accept it enough to access the other side of it too.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I think that ties into your prompt earlier as well, that we may have learned that it's not okay to feel deeply, that it's not okay to have that intuition, that part of us that maybe makes us a little different from other people that we were raised around. And if we were told that our sensitivity is bad, which many of us were, stop being so sensitive, why do you cry so much, just stop feeling that way, then it's easy to kind of put a lid on the whole kit and caboodle, or at least try to, and to really lose out on those lovely, I love the word you use, vibrant, you know, vibrancy giving aspects of our life and our experience. And that, to me, that's a real loss when we not only, you know, try to shut down or stuff away the parts of our sensitivity that could use some kind attention and healing, but also that we lose out, we don't see, we have tunnel vision away from those parts of our being, of ourselves that make us who we are, that are vibrant and beautiful.
So we've been talking here about like just also the stress response, right?
Yeah.
And so maybe we can kind of describe this a little bit more, go a little deeper here for the listener of how can we begin to understand how sensory overload, right, and having multiple competing expectations as a parent leads to stress, contributes to stress, and then the impact that that's going to have on ourselves and our reactions and our parenting.
Yeah. So, you know, the multiple competing demands, I think, is a really big aspect of this as parents. And that can come from many different parts of our life. It can come from, you know, our work situation, attending to multiple needs from the same child, or attending to multiple needs for multiple children, attending to our own needs, which, as I've mentioned, often kind of gets last in the priority list. But sensory overload. So, you know, we talked a little bit about the nervous system just briefly, that fight, flight, or freeze response. And it's there for a reason. And if we look back in human history, we needed that response in order to keep ourselves physically safe from, you know, predators and that kind of thing. The challenge is that our emotional overwhelm or our sensory overwhelm, our body reads that in much the same way as if like a tiger was chasing us. Our body doesn't totally know the difference right. between is it physically going to attack me or is there just a lot going on? And so we can go into that same fight, flight, or freeze, which can look like panic attacks. It can look like intense anxiety. It can look like yelling or anger or rage or, you know, dissociation, just disconnecting with our body and our feelings. And all of these are really hard for us as individuals, but also can make parenting, you know, we've talked about the different layers. It can make the logistical aspects of parenting more challenging if our anxiety is really high. And it can also make us feel bad about our ability to be present with our kids when we are experiencing this fight, flight, or freeze response. And that's really where the main challenge comes from. We talked about the O in does is, you know, overstimulation and how that, you know, I guess I didn't mention it explicitly, but I will now, that when we're overstimulated, our bodies can react in that fight, flight, or freeze response. And right. Multiple demands. And you talked about kind of the different five senses, like the different smells and the clutter and the loud noises and humming and buzzing and all of these things that can lead to this sensory overload, which leads to fight, flight, freeze, which leads to all sorts of challenging outcomes. And so,
yeah. As a mom to three, my partner and I find that one of the biggest struggles we have faced in our relationship is navigating sharing responsibilities and the mental load. And I know that we're not alone because this shows up with all of my clients, and in every podcast episode, the mental load of parenting shows up in some way or another. Enter the scene, Coexist. Coexist is the app that's revolutionizing how couples manage the mental load of household tasks and childcare. It's like having a personal assistant right in your pocket, helping you and your partner effortlessly share tasks, plan meals, collaborate on lists, and even give each other kudos along the way. Here's the cherry on top. For my amazing community, Coexist is offering an exclusive deal. Sign up for a 2-week free trial before June 15th, and you'll get 15% off the annual plan on iOS with the code DrCassidy15. So what are you waiting for? Really, take that first step towards a more harmonious home life today. Download Coexist on Android or iOS at getcoexist.com. The load in our home has been feeling a little bit lighter since downloading Coexist, and yours can feel lighter too when you download the Coexist app at getcoexist.com. Since becoming a parent and as I've gotten older, I've become a lot more mindful of the supplements and products that I use, and that's why I love Pieri. These are natural food supplements that I trust completely. Let's talk a bit about collagen. So collagen is so important for our bodies, but our natural production of it slows as we get older. So I've learned. And quality supplements support our muscle, bone, and joint health. Recently, I've been taking Puri's CP1 Pure Collagen Peptides. It was number one out of 28 collagens tested by the Organic Consumers Association and Clean Label Project. There are enough hard decisions that we make every day as parents, and this makes Puri an easy choice. See and feel the difference with Puri. I know you'll love their supplements as much as I do. Puri is offering my listeners an amazing deal, 20% off site-wide. Just go to my special URL, puri.com/Dr. Cassidy, and use my promo code Dr. Cassidy. So go to puri.com/Dr. Cassidy. Don't miss out. Use promo code Dr. Cassidy at puri.com/Dr. Cassidy. And you know, I think to kind of just like bring this to life a little, like let's imagine you're, you know, in a moment at home and, you know, you've got the TV on, the TV is blaring because, you know, someone's watching the TV and you have, you know, your baby is crying and, you know, wanting to feed and you're feeling hot and sweaty because that's like what hormones do to you. And as you're, you know, as you're like walking to go feed the baby, you know, you step on a Lego and, you know, you start to smell that, oh, the baby has a dirty diaper. So like, what do I need to do first, the diaper or the feeding? Because if I know if I change the diaper right now, the baby's just going to be screaming the whole time. Yeah. And like right in that moment, you're, you know, dog barks and you're like, you know, you're looking at, you know, the mess around you. And then your husband comes home and your partner comes home and they're like, hey, what's going on? And you lose it, right? Yeah. Like you lose it. And part of that, like that moment is your body is taking in all this information from the stimuli around you, trying to decipher, are any of these a threat, right? Like that Lego, something on that Lego hurt. There's a baby that's crying. There's mess. Does that mean that I'm a mess? Does that mean that something bad? Like your body's trying to decipher, is anything here a threat? And so sometimes that moment of just screaming or that rage that comes out is almost like your body's way of making everything stop, right? Because it's effective. Like your toddler might stop, like the dog even might stop, like just to get everything to stop so that your brain can like figure out where it needs to attend to, what it needs to prioritize. And yeah, it's a lot. And I think it's helpful to understand that there's, you know, so there's the fight, flight, freeze response. But folks have also talked about and done some work around understanding the fawn response, which is like befriending the enemy, you know, but it could also look like putting the needs of others above your own, right? Which, hello, that could be a very common one. And then there's actually a flock response. So flock means, you know, in the, you know, animal kingdom would mean when there's a threat to flock together, right? There's power, protection in numbers. And so I think there's also potentially this like urge for us to find like people to help us. But unfortunately, I think in our society, there's a lot of messages around like, you know, individuality and a lot of shame around asking for support or help. It's difficult to access that, you know, sometimes. There could be a lot of, I mean, it can be a really powerful response and supportive, but can be tricky too, you know. And like, where's the village that like, it takes a village, but where's the village? You know, like I'm in my home. I can't flock to the village to like, you know, hand the baby over so I can go rest, you know? It can be, it's really hard. So to all of this, we've mentioned self-care and I'd love to hear from you. Like, what are some like practical steps to really, you know, addressing the need for self-care? Like we've all heard that like some version of self-care is important, but like how do we realistically do this in modern day parenthood, you know? And maybe to that topic, like what are some of the unique challenges that like modern day parents face when it comes to taking care of themselves?
Yeah, well, I think you named a really important one just now, which is the lack of a village, so to speak, right? I often will say to parents things along the lines of, this is not a you problem, this is a societal problem, just to decentralize the, you know, shame or guilt that they might feel about not being able to be the best parent they can be 24/7. And, you know, if we take a look at that, we realize, okay, that's impossible. None of us can be an amazing parent beyond 24/7. And yet historically we did, at least here in the United States, we had, we have had more of a village support around us, right? We've had extended family. And here in the United States now, we don't often have that. We live far away from family, or we have really intense work lives, or just a very, very busy schedule. And it can be very difficult to have the time that we need to take care of ourselves, to take care of our family in the way that ideally we would want to. So time constraints, I think, is a big one. And we've also mentioned just the guilt and shame. And that's really where I see a lot of highly sensitive parents get stuck, really stuck with not being able to engage in self-care in an effective way. And by the way, I'm going to pause and just examine, like, what is self-care before I go further than this? Because I think a lot of us have this idea of self-care as, like, yoga, which is, like, all of these things are wonderful, by the way, but they're not – they're not necessarily like the full definition of what self-care could or should be. And it's not just something that people who have a lot of privilege or a lot of time can or should access. And so to me, self-care, it's really important, especially for highly sensitive parents, to name that it's not just about adding things on. Like, certainly that can be lovely, right? Like getting a massage, or having lunch with a friend, or those kind of things. So that's wonderful. But a lot of it, the self-care that highly sensitive parents tend to need is in reducing, is in taking things off their plate. So whether that is really looking at a work situation or a volunteering situation and saying, is this sustainable for me? Do I want to say yes to this? You know, we're recording this around the holidays, and, you know, do I want to travel? Do I want to commit to going to 3 parties in 1 week? And often the answer is no, or at least not to the extent that we're doing it. And so self-care is really, to me, an equation, not just of adding things, but of subtracting things that are too much, that are causing stress, that we might be excited about or want to do, but just aren't working for us at that moment in time, and really giving ourselves the permission to say no. I mean, that's a whole other episode, in my opinion, of like saying no as a parent, probably. But
yes,
yeah,
but super important in the, and especially, yes, I think with modern day parenthood and just like how much stimuli, like we're talking here about like being overstimulated, how much stimuli we're receiving and like how many tabs we have open in our brain. And the expectations, and it's so much, right? And so we oftentimes have to explore, yes, the boundaries and what it is that we're going to take off on the schedule, and like or reprioritize in our lives in order to create more margins, right? Like, I think I oftentimes, if I take a look at a day and I feel at the end of the day really drained, a lot of times it's in that day that I'll notice that there just was not a lot of margin, a lot of margin for like my brain, for my body, like for my brain to process even just what just I experienced, right? Or for my body to like eat or to rest or to just be still, right? To like go outside. and sometimes those boundaries look like saying no. Sometimes those boundaries look like saying yes to screen time for my child so that I can get some of that space for myself if I don't have that village around me. Sometimes it looks like exploring ways that I can activate that a support system, right? And or get support in other ways if
if asking for help is hard, like going to therapy to figure out how I can, you know, do that and not have to do that alone, walk that alone. But yeah, it's for me, a lot of times it's about looking for the margins and creating more space for margins.
Absolutely. I think that I call it kind of like a buffer zone. And that's something that society doesn't really encourage, having buffers between activities, but it is so critical for most HSPs to have those buffers, and they don't even need to be long. So, you know, something between an activity. So say you're, you know, for me, I work from home, and I find that if I go straight from my home office and walk right out and need to start making dinner or engaging with my kids right away, I'm often not as fully present or in a great mood, just because it's too quick of a transition and I haven't had time to kind of integrate physically or mentally my day and to move forward intentionally into what the next part of the day, kind of putting on a different hat, so to speak, might look like for myself. And so I think, you know, getting into some practical ways to engage in self-care that are going to really have an impact, but also be workable for highly sensitive parents, having that buffer or having those micro breaks, I call them, we might not have the opportunity to go out and, you know, go to the gym for an hour every day when we have little ones at home. But many of us, if we prioritize and if we truly give ourselves permission, say this is important, not just for me, but for my family, to take care of myself in this way, many of us can carve out, you know, 15 minutes to do a yoga or meditation practice online, or to pick up, you know, a paintbrush and some paints and just do a 10-minute painting, right? So it doesn't need to be, and often we don't have access to, you know, those longer stretches, you know, a weekend retreat, for example, also wonderful, highly recommended for HSP parents. Totally. But if we don't have that, give ourselves permission. Can we, you know, take our child on a walk to the park and sit them in the stroller for their nap and, you know, bring a book and lay on the grass? Mm. Or can we ask a friend to meet us somewhere, or just so finding those time for breaks, subtracting things from our schedule can also be a really powerful form of self-care. And then the third that's again can get stuck in sort of this guilt is reducing sensory input. And so I know a common one is, you know, wearing noise reducing headphones or noise canceling headphones. That can be so supportive. And when I suggest that to parents, sometimes there's a response of, oh my gosh, but does that make me like a bad parent that I don't want to listen to my baby cry? And I usually will say something along the lines of, you'll still hear them cry. Like, you'll still hear them cry through the headphones. We just don't need, we already have the volume turned up, and your body is going to respond better to hearing the volume at 20% versus 100%.
Yep. My husband wears noise canceling headphones on a daily basis. And I know as a partner at first, I was triggered by it. I was like, one of his friends got it for him for Christmas one year. A friend that now I reflect, like, knew him very, very deeply well. He started wearing them a lot. Mm-hmm. He really seemed to be into it. And I remember feeling like he's like canceling us out, right? Like, like, you're just not listening to us now. And it really took actually our son getting diagnosed with sensory processing disorder, and then my husband really relating to it, that then we both and I more deeply understood that actually when he's doing this, it is – he can still hear us, but it's a way for him to remain present and take care of himself so that he can show up as a parent who's not overstimulated and overwhelmed and then thus irritable, right? And so really – And so I think as a partner, that was really helpful in kind of naming. And then as an individual, for the individual to not feel like this is something that I should be ashamed of or feel guilty around. Like, this is actually a version of me taking care of myself, right? Like, finding ways to really, yeah, turn down the dial of that overstimulation and the sensory input that you're getting, and headphones can be a great one.
Yeah, I absolutely love what you just said about using things like noise-canceling headphones or, you know, for me, another big one, for example, is like avoiding really intensely crowded or loud places like Chuck E. Cheese or like kids' birthday parties at bouncy trampoline places. There's some guilt associated with that, right? But I wish I could just bottle up what you just said and just sprinkle it all over HSP parents everywhere about how when we make those choices I guess it's setting boundaries, right? It's setting boundaries around the inputs. It's setting boundaries around what places feel okay for us, or, you know, which environments are not so supportive to our sensory selves, that ultimately it's in service of us being healthy and truly to us being the best parents that we possibly can be, right? We may wish, that our children's cries, or my 8-year-old son, my older son, is very, he has just high attention needs. I love him. And he also just is like, hey, mommy, show me this. I want to do this, and loves to just kind of be all over. And that's beautiful. And there's also times when it's overwhelming and it's overstimulating. And I might have a moment of self-compassion, and I hope, I encourage other parents to do this as well, where I say, I wish that I was not quite so overstimulated by that part of my son's, you know, being. And yet I accept myself and notice the gifts of my sensitivity as well. And how can I, like I would with anyone else, how can I compassionately respond to my unique needs, my limitations, the things that do and don't work for me, and really nurture that? And I think sometimes those simple things like wearing the noise-canceling headphones or, you know, taking these micro breaks. I love what you said about this screen time. And I've actually told one of my clients once, I said, please have a minimum amount of screen time per day. Not a maximum, a minimum. I said, you should be putting your child on, you know, at least 20 or 30 minutes of screen time per day so that you can get that downtime, because otherwise
it is to hear someone say that. Thank you.
and she was like, what? But really, you know, giving ourselves permission to take that time to do things that on the surface might make us feel like, you know, quote, bad parents, to turn down the volume on our kids or to take a break from them. And then really reflect on, as you did, you know, with your husband wearing the headphones, that, wow, this actually made me, or made my partner more present and more calm and more regulated. And what a gift that he gave to your family and to himself by taking that step, even though it took a little bit of adjustment to get used to it.
Yeah, totally. Oh my gosh. And I think, you know, I love that you're talking about like a minimum of screen time, right? Like for you as a parent. Yeah. And then I think what I had to kind of reflect on for myself in that too, is then like, how am I spending that time? Right. Like, we're so addicted to our phones. Right. And it's just like, and Instagram, for instance, like is literally built to keep us like our finger just turning to it to scroll. But I know that there's a lot of beauty that I have found through social media and connection, and maybe the listener found me there and now they're listening to this episode. So I love that that little app was able to build this bridge for us. But also, I know for me, as I'm scrolling, my brain is just taking in a lot more input. And so how I choose to, while my child is on a screen, choose to create that margin and space for myself, right, to regulate my nervous system. I might choose to like notice that I went straight to my phone and then I'm going to put this down for a moment. And I think instead I'm going to like go outside with like, I'm going to make myself some tea and like go outside for a little bit and just like let myself just be while the screen time babysitter is like helping me in this moment to get that like micro break. Right. So just like having that intention, just like noticing those like impulses for more information and pausing, taking a beat, you know? And I think another, what I kind of wanted, maybe would love to like end with here, is just sharing another gift of being a highly sensitive parent and what that can be mean for our children because of that empathy. Like, we can really deeply understand and have access to what our children might need with their feelings, right? And their deep feelings or their sensitivities. You mentioned you have a highly sensitive child. I do too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what that means is that, like, in a moment when, say, my toddler is crying and my highly sensitive, deeply feeling middle child screams, "June, stop!" I get that because he is overstimulated in that moment. And just like I, in the example I gave earlier, sometimes will rage and yell to make things just stop so that my brain gets a moment to, like, figure out if it's a threat or not, right? Like, or just to make it stop. Like, he's doing the same thing in that moment. And so I can have that empathy inside of me in that moment, can acknowledge that what he's needing is, like, to turn down the volume, right? And so he has headphones. And so I'll actually say, "Hey, bud, do you think that maybe the headphones could help right now? Because she's having feelings, and just like you get to let them out, she gets to let them out too right now. You want me to go grab those headphones for you?" Right? Or to, like, name it for him. Like, "You know what and maybe later on, like, maybe after when we're going to bed and cuddling at night, like, "Hey, but you know that moment when June was crying and the TV was on and, you know, the dog was there, and, you know, I think I've felt in those moments before, I have felt overstimulated. Like, my body was just having too much information coming in." Do you kind of relate to that? And it gives him language, which then later on, this is such a beautiful example. And, like, obviously it doesn't always turn out look like this, but we were traveling and he was in the back seat with a cousin of his who was a baby and cried for, we were in traffic and this little cousin cried for like 30 minutes straight in the car. And he was in the back with the baby. And, you know, he started off, like, trying to distract him and play with him, make him laugh. And then the baby was not laughing or distracted. The baby just cried. We get to our destination. And it's a new environment too. Mm-hmm. But he came up to me and I could see it. I mean, the last 10 minutes, he was just, like, in the back, like, covering his ears, like, rocking back and forth, kind of, you know, like, whining and complaining himself. We get there and he looked at me. He's like, "Mom." And he had the word for it. "I am overstimulated. Can I go in a room by myself?" And, you know, we just got there. There was, like, family that he hadn't seen yet that we were supposed to, like, you know, all these expectations of, like, say hello to this person and that person. Like, the kid just sat for 30 minutes with a crying baby in the back. Like, had the language to communicate what he was feeling, what he needed. And I went to my aunt and I was like, "Hey, can Everson just go hang out in a room for a little bit before he, like, you know, says hi to everyone? He just needs some space and time." And she was like, she kind of, like, it was, like, such a, like, a odd request, but she's like, "Okay, sure." And got him, you know, I got him a glass of water. He was in this, like, dark room by himself for a while. And I just told him, "Let me know, you know, when you're ready to come out, I'll come check in on you in a bit if you want." And then the aunt came to me afterward and she was like, "That is so," she's like, "I never," like, she was just, like, bewildered. And she's like, because I think a highly sensitive person. She's like, "I have never given myself permission to ask for what your son just asked for. Like, I'm walking into space and I think I just need to be alone before I engage with everyone because I'm overwhelmed and overstimulated." And, you know, gosh, plenty of moments where he doesn't have the word, he doesn't access the words, and it's, like, super messy. I'm just like, "No, the expectation, like, we can't do that right now," like, you know, all that stuff. But it was one of those moments where I was just like, "This is a gift I can give to him, and I have access to the empathy and understanding because of my own sensitivities, right? And I can ask myself in these moments, what did I really need as a kid?" What could I have really used in that moment in support so I didn't just have to feel like I had to shut that part of myself down, you know? Or what could I have really learned in a moment like that as a kid? And being able to offer that to our children, I think, is a gift that that part of us can bring to the table.
Yes, so true. And, you know, not only to teach our children and to model to them what they need, which is my husband's actually not an HSP at all. And I'm grateful for that in many ways because he can pick up the slack when I'm like, oh my gosh, I need that time. And he can kind of be like, yeah, sure, whatever, that's fine. You know, a lot of the time. And sometimes I find myself feeling guilty that I need more of that time than he does. But on the flip side, there's been many times where he said to me, oh, I'm so grateful that you have this sensitivity and you know what our children need and you know how to respond to their emotions and you can help them, you know, in a similar way to what you just described. You can help them to have the language and to know how to, you know, become calm and to take good care of themselves in those moments. And he doesn't feel like he's quite as able to do that because he's not highly sensitive. And so there really is, you know, a gift. There's gifts on both sides of on all sides of the spectrum, really. And, you know, not only I love how you gave the language and the permission to your son to take that break, but can we not only do that for our kids, but can we learn and give ourselves permission to do it for ourselves, right? Like, how many times have we wanted to, after a long trip or a hard day at work, to take that half an hour or 10 minutes? And it really goes back to that buffer time, right? In like a very meaningful way. It didn't take too long. He just needed a quiet room. I call it a cozy corner sometimes, like just a place that's not cluttered, that's quiet, that maybe has, you know, some things that make us feel good. I know, like, you know, smells that make us feel good, or essential oils, or just something soft and cuddly, or, you know, we're big kids in a way, right? We need our sensory needs met as well. And what might it look like for you to start not only giving your child permission to take care of themselves in that way, but also to give yourself the permission to do that?
Oof, yeah. And that's like the harder one, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, but it's really tricky to take our kids somewhere to teach them something that we struggle to do for ourselves. So that's a hard truth, but like a really, really meaningful and important one. And maybe that's the bridge that we take to like say, okay, maybe I do need to understand more of these things for myself and like, you know, process some of my old stuff and learn some tools for myself so that I can help my kids. And then, you know, once you get in there, hopefully you can also begin to develop this sense of like, this isn't just for my kids, but this is because I am deserving and worthy of this, even outside of what I can do for others around me. This has been such a meaningful conversation for me personally, and I hope it is for the listener. Amy, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people connect with you if they would like to learn more about your work?
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, thank you so much for having me on. It's always a pleasure to talk about this. And I'm just so passionate about empowering highly sensitive parents to not see their sensitivity as a flaw and, you know, something to be fixed, but really something to be celebrated and to be leveraged for themselves and for their parenthood journey. So listeners can find me at Highly Sensitive Parenthood. That's the website, highlysensitiveparenthood.com. I'm also on Instagram and YouTube under those names. And I have a podcast under that name as well. And I'd like to offer too, for listeners of Holding Space, I'd love to offer a 20% off coupon for any of the gifts or any of the resources and services through highlysensitiveparenthood.com. You simply use Holding Space, all caps, no spaces, to get 20% off. And I'd love to connect with you. You can email me as well, amy@highlysensitiveparenthood.com.
Thank you, Amy, so much. I'll be sure to share all of that and the links in the show notes for the listener if they want to go straight there and check it out. Again, thank you so much for coming on. As I said, such a meaningful conversation in so many ways for me.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Cassidy.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you did, you might want to hit that subscribe button to be the first to know when future episodes air. And go and explore some of those past episodes. Maybe there's a topic in there that you've really been wanting to learn more about. You can learn more about my private practice as well as my parenting courses and workshops at the link in the show notes. You held space for yourself today. You carved out the time and you tuned in to this episode.
I hope you take a moment to honor how meaningful that is. Yes, to me for sure, but also for you. Thank you for tuning in, and I'll catch you next time.